Live on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A, it's time for Q&A with DJ Phone. Today's program is sponsored by High Country Rec V Center, David Snyder, CPA, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Yavapai Regional Medical Center, and Prescott College. Now, here's your host for Q&A, DJ Phone.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Q&A. We're going to learn a great deal on today's show about a topic everybody seems to think they can do well, but few really do. It's about writing. And I know an awful lot of people have dreamed about writing their own book, about writing articles, stories, magazines, things like this. Well, we have a couple of people on the show today to talk about that. One is our favorite local historian, Bill Weiss. He does a lot of work at the Prescott Library. In fact, he has a talk coming up very shortly we'll be talking about. And then after the news break with Link, we'll talk with Susan Lang from Peregrine Books. She is doing a workshop this Saturday at Peregrine about the writing process, and she has written several books too, as has Bill. So we'll be talking about writing and where these ideas come from and how to get them onto paper and into people's hands coming up on today's Q&A. Now, the Diamondbacks are off tonight. They fly from L.A. to Pittsburgh. Well, that's a long flight. They will start a four-game series tomorrow with the Pirates. Hopefully they will not renew the beanball battle that took place here last week. And as you may have heard during the week, big changes are coming to Q&A. Next week, due to the early Diamondbacks games on the East Coast, there will be no Q&A Monday through Wednesday, June 25th through the 27th. I will return at my normal time on Thursday the 28th. However, starting July 2nd, Q&A moves permanently to 2 p.m., followed by the new Ben Shapiro show for 1 hour. Then Talk of the Town continues at its usual 4 p.m. slot. Talk of the Town next week, Monday through Wednesday, will be at 3, since there's no Q&A Monday through Wednesday of next week. So keep that in mind for you. We've got Bill Weiss in the bullpen coming just around the corner on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 a.m., 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. We stream live around the world at kqna.com.
Load up the RV and hit the open road to the repair shop. Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rec V Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
Membership in the Prescott Chamber of Commerce is good for your business. As a member, your business will be listed on the Prescott Chamber website and in the Chamber's annual directory. You're also eligible to place brochures in the Chamber's lobby and opportunities galore to network with other business people at monthly mixers and other events. Join the Prescott Chamber today at 445-2000. Prescott's business advocate, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce.
Hi, Ken with the Plants of the Week and our Cheyenne Spirit Coneflower.
This new native is an exclusive wildflower sure to delight and inspire.
The flowers change from purples to orange, then fade into a Cheyenne sunset.
Leave some of the seed head so that it spreads throughout the garden. Adds winter beauty that also feeds the birds through winter. And just $17.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott, where people who love exclusive flowers, they love to shop.
At Norm's Lock and Safe, we stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of safes? Liberty Safes, that is. This is Jody. I am so excited. We are now the largest authorized Liberty dealer in Northern Arizona. And just like all of us at Norm's, Liberty Safes are made right here in the U.S. of A and have lifetime warranties. Check out the new showroom of Liberty Home and Gun Safes. Life, Liberty, and Norm's Lock and Safe. What more could you want? Play it safe with Liberty Safes at Norm's in Prescott Valley.
Provide value. That's what a CPA can do for you. Hi, this is David A. Snyder, CPA. Now is a great time of year for business valuations. Valuations are for providing a value for your business so you can retire from it, sell it, or expand it. With my ex-military, task-oriented mindset, and over 20 years of experience, you can trust that you can get the most accurate business valuation. Give me a call or visit DavidASnyderCPA.com for more information. You deserve the sharpest in Arizona. David A. Snyder, CPA.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
And we are back live at 306. Always great to have a friend in the studio, especially one I always learn so much from. Bill Weiss, our favorite historian and author. Bill, you've got a talk coming up Thursday, the 28th. That is a week from tomorrow. Tell us about where and when it's about.
Well, the title of the talk, DJ, is Atoms on My Mind. It's a review of how Americans reacted to the nuclear age, starting with the bombings of Japan. It'll be at Ollie in Ayavapai College, mm-hmm. 12 to 2 next Thursday, the 28th, in Building 4, Room 102.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you've learned about that era. When did Americans first know, do you think, that an atomic bomb was in the making?
Well, none of them knew an atomic bomb was in the making except the scientists working at the Manhattan Project. But within hours of the bombing of Hiroshima on August 6, 1945, President Truman revealed the bombings. He said it would save thousands and thousands of American lives. And what I was astonished to find was that within hours of Truman's announcement, most of the pundits were predicting doomsday. Some of the quotes I found, for example, H.B. Kaltenborn, who was the premier radio pundit of the era, said, "For all we know, we have created a Frankenstein. We must assume that with the passage of only a little time, an improved form of the new weapon we use today can be turned against us." Edward R. Murrow on August 10th, a few days later, said, "Seldom, if ever, has a war ended, leaving the victors with such a sense of uncertainty." Mm-hmm. And there were others, too. In that terrible flash, men here have seen not only the fate of Japan, but have glimpsed the future of America. That was James Reston in the New York Times. And so what really surprised me was these radio and newspaper pundits, none of whom, to my knowledge, had any background in science and technology, yeah, grasped a fundamental scientific truth. Science is knowledge. Knowledge belongs to the world. Put another way, what we created could be created by others and used against us. Mm-hmm. And they sensed that right away.
Yep. Yeah. And there was also a scientist on the Manhattan Project. You'll know his name. I can't remember it right now. But in the documentary, The Day After Trinity, I remember him saying the moment after the blast, "My God, what have we created?"
Yeah. It said, that was Oppenheimer. And he said,
there we go. Thank you. Robert Oppenheimer.
And
yeah,
he said, he quoted the Bhagavad Gita saying, "I have become death, destroyer of worlds."
Now, don't you think part of the cynicism on the part of some of these, especially Northeastern media kingpins, writers, might have been the fact that they didn't have a whole lot of respect for Harry Truman because he was not a man with glittering educational credentials?
I think most Americans didn't have a lot of faith in Harry Truman right away because he was the only president in the 20th century who never attended college, and he looked like a pygmy after FDR. But I think that their cynicism was they went after the atomic bomb mostly because it was good science. Mm-hmm. Once Germany surrendered, and Germany was the principal leader in nuclear research before World War II, once Germany surrendered, they thought the pressure was off. In fact, more than half of the atomic scientists in the Manhattan Project signed petitions urging President Truman to conduct a demonstration for the Japanese rather than use it, thinking that they would get that off their consciences. Little did they know that Japan would never have surrendered without the use of the atomic bomb.
Did Japan know this might happen?
No, they did not. Interestingly enough, in 1939, Germany, Japan, and the U.S. independently started pursuing government-sponsored efforts to see if nuclear weapons were feasible, but Germany and Japan got nowhere. Mm-hmm. We were the leaders because we had critical masses of our own, of scientists, many of them refugees from European fascism, especially of natural resources, monetary resources, and physical security to pursue that. So we were able to build a bomb way before anybody else did. But the knowledge of nuclear fission belonged to the world. Mm-hmm. All it needed was a country with our kind of wherewithal. And even before the knowledge of espionage, most of the Manhattan Project scientists predicted that the Soviets would be able to get their own bomb in 3 to 5 years. And in fact, they got one in 4.
Oh, wow. When you mentioned nuclear fission, I'm reminded of an article in The Week magazine last week about the, I believe it's called the Higgs boson collider, which is under a mountain. It's the world's largest machine. How in the world, where do you think it all started with the idea that if you can separate atoms and get them to collide, you can create a catastrophic machine?
Well, it was part of a long process, DJ. That started in the last years of the 19th century with Henri Becquerel, a French physicist, who discovered radiation, with the Curies, who discovered new radioactive materials. But again, science is knowledge. Within 10 years, nuclear science, physics, and chemistry had become the hottest moving, fastest moving fields in scientific research, with world-beating research going on in, 13 or 14 countries. By 1930, the basics of the atom had been laid out by Bohr and Rutherford. And in 1933, Leo Szilard envisioned a chain reaction. That is, with neutrons colliding and giving off more neutrons, a large amount of energy would be created. And if you could smash together two pieces of fissionable material like uranium in a microsecond, all the energy would be given off at once. Boom! From there, it was just a matter of technology.
And which, of course, made uranium the most valuable mineral in the world, right?
Temporarily, yes. Very hard to produce, although later not so hard to produce, and then supplanted by plutonium, which is strictly man-made. But the other interesting thing was right after the post-war, good old American optimism came into the fore equally quickly. Some of the predictions that people made were just really astonishing. For example, on August 12, 1945, the New York Times reported French officials planning the country's winter fuel needs were now wondering whether they need bother if a few atoms could be pulverized between now and winter and the released energy distributed as heat. I know other good stuff. Polar ice caps could be melted by atomic rays. Atomic airplanes could carry several thousand passengers. Artificial suns mounted on tall steel towers will mean that no baseball game will be called off. Wow. You know, it was really good stuff. And medicine, one of the ones that the quotes that I found in my research, this is a good one. A cancer patient in Nagasaki enjoyed prolonged remission as a result of radiation received at the time of the blast. This is from the West Virginia Medical Journal. I guess the Japanese are really grateful we hit him with that bomb.
You think of all the people it cured.
Yeah.
One way or the other. We are talking with Bill Weiss. His talk is coming up Thursday, the 28th, from 12 to 2 at Yavapai College on behalf of Ollie. That's Building 4, Room 102. A lot more coming up with Bill Weiss in just a moment on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 11:30 a.m., 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. Streaming live around the world at KQ.
To buy or not to buy? Findlay Toyota Prescott says lease for less. Right now at Findlay Toyota Prescott, get a brand new Toyota car, truck, or SUV for up to 50% less when you lease. Lease a brand new 2018 Toyota RAV4 LE for only $219 a month for 36 months. Lease for less. Lease a new 2018 Toyota 4Runner four-wheel drive for $369 per month for 36 months. Lease for less. Get a new Toyota for up to 50% less when you lease. Findlay Toyota Prescott and at FindlayToyotaPrescott.com. Come in today, and we'll show you how easy it is to lease for less. Thank you for voting Findlay Toyota Prescott the Daily Courier 2018 Reader's Choice Award for Best Automotive Dealership, Best Pre-Owned Dealership, and Best Oil Change.
Findlay Toyota Prescott, we are everybody's hometown dealer.
Offers on approved credit, plus finance with Toyota Financial Services. Lease RAV4 model 4430 with $29.99 to its signing. Lease 4Runner model 8664 with $32.99 to its signing. Security deposit waived. Does not include tax, license, title fee, $495 documentation fees. Offer expires 7/9/2018.
Take advantage of your golden years. These are the times to reflect, relax, and have a whole lot of fun. Country Bank's home equity conversion mortgage, known as a reverse mortgage, could be your supplemental financial option. Suzanne Crosley, the reverse mortgage specialist at Country Bank, can show you how to convert a portion of your home equity into tax-free money.
Come by and see me, Suzanne Crosley at Country Bank, or call me at 928-583-9015 for more details.
An equal housing lender, member FDIC.
$14 a month. That's all you'll pay for 24-hour alarm monitoring from Western States Communications. This is Sanford Cohen. If your alarm company has tried to raise your rates, do what I did. Make the switch to Western States Communications. They even use my existing equipment. Now I'm only paying $14 a month for 24/7 security. Call right now at 772-3529 and they'll give you 2 months monitoring free. That's Western States Communications alarm monitoring, $14 a month, 772-3529.
If you're a contractor or an industry partner, Yavapai County Contractors Association needs you. Why? With the YCCA membership, your business can be stronger. We are a referral organization. We represent you in legislative issues. We work with building departments. We are your voice and your strength. YCCA, helping businesses like yours since 1960. Call me, Sandy, 928-778-0040, ycca.org.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
We are live at 317. We're back with Bill Weiss. He is talking to Yavapai College, part of the OLLI program, coming up a week from tomorrow from 12 to 2 in Building 4, Room 102 at Yavapai College. Bill, one of the things that you've been exploring in your research for the atomic age was how often in this era of conformity and of nonstop cheerleading for everything we do, meaning the 1950s, you discovered a wholesale nuclear testing going on with serious negative effects that our government covered up.
Yes, indeed. We did have to test nuclear weapons to improve them and create enlarge their yields, although a lot of people now say it was just so much saber-rattling for the benefit of the Soviets. The Soviets did the same. But many of us of a certain age remember when you could tune on TV early in the morning and see some atomic test at Yucca Flats, Nevada, and right after the blast, whole battalions of troops would be marched right into Ground Zero, the mushroom cloud still forming. And the idea here was to give you the idea that nuclear war was not unthinkable. It was fightable and winnable. Mm-hmm. And the government concealed the negative effects of radiation. The result was thousands and thousands of people, civilians as well, were irradiated. The government took no responsibility for it and until fairly recently. And you were just supposed to live with it.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of like the mayor of Flint, Michigan, taking a bottle of tap water a few years ago.
Yes.
And as you have found out through your research, it's amazing how many things can be uncovered through the Freedom of Information Act, accessing previously classified documents that would make your hair stand on end if you knew at the time what was going on.
Yes, indeed. One of the little statistics I found was that one day, the entire output of film at the Eastman Kodak plant in Rochester, New York, was ruined by little specks in the film, which were ultimately traced back to an atomic test in Nevada that occurred 3 days earlier. All that radiation was carried by the wind right into New York State and beyond. The crew of a movie with John Wayne playing Genghis Khan, the Conquerors, filmed in Utah downwind of the tests. More than half the crew died of cancer when the normal range would have been about 15%. Mm-hmm. And that included John Wayne and Susan Hayward.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear of strontium-90?
Oh, when did I not hear of strontium-90 when I was growing up? Strontium-90 was a fallout product that found its way into grass, which cows ate, which then got into their milk, which got into the bones of children. Strontium-90 scared the heck out of everybody.
Yeah. The reason I brought that up, when I was a little kid in St. Louis, all the public schools in St. Louis were part of the baby tooth survey, and they gave us blue cards to fill out, and every time we lost a baby tooth, we asked the parents to tape it to the card, fill it out, and submit it, because they were testing the teeth of children in that era to see if there was any strontium-90 in their bones. Bones and teeth.
Yes. In fact, strontium-90 became such a negative celebrity around the world that it was ultimately a big factor in the above-ground test treaty that the U.S. signed with the Soviet Union in 1963. Strontium-90 was the great bugbear of that age.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of like the DDT on steroids, wasn't it?
And more so, because it was a product of fission, and fission scared everybody.
And you know what? When it gets into the food supply and things like that, it reminds me of how the 1950s, so many horror movies of the 1950s had to do with the nuclear scare. What might happen if this technology gets out of our control? And what kinds of things did they create?
Yes, all those creature features of the 50s were a real product of the scare of that era, because radiation just scared everybody. It was invisible, it was silent, and it was deadly, and it could cause horrible things like all these transmutations. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I found, because I was a big, big fan of those movies, and I still have them, is that the scientists come off rather poorly in these movies. They're the guys who have been fooling around with all this atomic energy irresponsibly.
You don't mess with Mother Nature.
That's right. You don't mess with Mother Nature. The heroes are usually the military or the police. For example, one that was filmed or portrayed in Arizona called Tarantula, the scientist is irresponsibly irradiating common creatures with radioactivity, and they grow to preposterous sizes, including this tarantula that gets loose, and it's about to crush the state of Arizona until a battalion of a squadron of U.S. Air Force jets with napalm, led by a very young Clint Eastwood, whom you can't recognize because he's got a face mask on, just bomb the creature into oblivion. Scientist, bad guy, military, good guy. Same everywhere else. Godzilla, also known as Gojira in Japan, filmed after a big U.S. H-bomb test irradiated a Japanese fishing crew. This creature, Godzilla, is awakened from a slumber and made immortal. Scientists are the bad guys. Dr. Suzuki, an anthropologist, said, we should study the creature, right? Suzuki studies while Tokyo burns, and Dr. Sarazal, the man who has the oxygen destroyer, refuses to use it until he is blackjacked morally, physically, and spiritually into doing so. And once he unleashes it, he cuts his air hose and does the honorable thing. It's really crazy stuff. But it was all this subliminal resentment against what these scientists had wrought in atomic weapons that gave you the opportunity to get back at them.
And then 30 years after Godzilla, we had a trace of the same element in Jurassic Park, Steven Spielberg's classic, where you had scientists run amok who got arrogant and didn't realize the consequences of their actions.
Sure, not only that, but they were motivated by money.
There you are. Again, that's always a good bugaboo for movies, isn't it?
Yep.
In fact, the new Jurassic Park that opens, I believe, tomorrow night at the Harkins, not only are the dinosaurs running loose on the island where the Jurassic Resort was destroyed in the last film, but now a volcano is erupting too, threatening to eradicate the design of the dinosaurs once again.
Yes.
This all comes full circle, doesn't it?
All full circle. And we're going to have an ice age.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Let me ask you this, Bill, to bring this to contemporary issues. When you see high-level talks, summit talks, between the U.S. president and the president of, or the premier of North Korea, what do you think with this kind of background?
Well, it's Kim's... North Korea proves that science is knowledge and knowledge belongs to the world. Basically, you can find the formula for building an atomic weapon on the web. What you need is fissionable material, but even an impoverished fascistic country like North Korea, if they deprive their citizens often enough, can produce enough fissionable material to make nuclear weapons. And, not what's more, given the state of affairs, North Korea, a third-rate power by any other means, is now a first-rate power. It was their missiles and their nukes that got our attention and brought President Trump to the bargaining table. And now Kim has gained a lot of face. The President of the United States sat down with him.
Yep.
Take that, the rest of Asia.
And there are people who will say that Kim has already gotten what he wanted because he was sharing the world stage with the U.S. President.
Absolutely right. Because if he gave up his missiles and his nukes, he'd go back to being a third-rate power.
Sure.
He's gotten everything he could possibly want except sanctions relief. Mm-hmm. But the face he gained will get him more respect in countries that want to do business with him, like China.
Do you see echoes of the Peter Sellers movie, The Mouse That Roared, in this?
Oh, you could... Well, that's an interesting point. Yeah, by extension, you could say that. How did that little country get everybody's attention? Because a nuclear weapon was stashed there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the movie, which was a comedy, by the way, fortunately, they threatened a war, or they declared war on the U.S., knowing the U.S. would wipe them out and completely rebuild them, you know, with fresh everything, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of movies from that era, you know, with all the scary movies, you know, with the atomic monsters and stuff like this and technology and radiation run amok, the one that frightened me the most was a very realistic one that echoes today, Failsafe.
Oh, yes.
And I'm reading the book by Sidney Lumet called Making Movies, and he's talking about the making of that movie. It was black and white, very spare, and the whole story just keeps hanging over you.
Yes, that was a brilliant movie. Sidney Lumet, one of our greatest directors. Most moviegoers don't see the art of the director past the story and the acting and the sets. There you see the director's art because that movie is claustrophobic.
It is.
There's no sets except the president talking on the telephone or a couple of guys in an Air Force jet in the cockpit. And yet it's harrowing in the extreme. And not only that, the cause of it, a compound failure, of a failure of a small electronic gadget that triggers this attack is entirely realistic. And there's no stopping it once it gets started.
And the reason that's so scary is because military men are trained to follow that order, no matter what.
That's right.
And they even get one of the pilot's wives on the intercom with him to tell him to stop. And then the president gets on her. You have to stop. This is a mistake. No, sir. I have my orders. And holy smokes, does that get frightening.
Yes. A pilot, well-trained, says, I can no longer receive tactical alterations in my flight plan. His wife says, Jack, we're fine. And the co-pilot says, you can't trust it, sir. Click.
Exactly. And that is exactly why it's so frightening, because it is potentially realistic.
Yes.
And
a great movie.
Yeah, Henry Fonda, Larry Hagman, of course. Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. Scary.
Mr. Chairman, this is the President of the United States. How are you, Mr. President?
And to this day, when I hear the sound of that phone melting.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Amazing stuff. Well, Bill, your talk is going to be Atoms on My Mind. It's coming up next Thursday, the 28th, 12 to 2 p.m., Building 4, Room 102, part of the OLLI program at Yavapai College. It will be fascinating and thrilling, and take us all back, won't it?
I hope it also takes us forward.
Yeah, indeed. That's very, very well said. Bill Weiss, our favorite historian and author, thanks for joining us today on Q&A. We have another author stepping in just a few minutes. We're going to talk to Susan Lang from Peregrine Books on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, streaming live around the world at KQNA.com.
Hi, James Roush here at Bualka Bulk Mortgage. Are you interested in buying a home and just have a million questions running through your head? The James Roush team at Bualka Bulk Mortgage is here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by appointment. Even if you need to meet on Saturday morning because of your work schedule, we'll be there. Call the James Roush team at 445-8730, Bualka Bulk Mortgage.
License number 00128295, LNS number 16209, Equal Opportunity Lender.
It's baseball season, and you know what that means. The dog days of summer are right around the corner. Hi, this is Jeremy Rushton of Yavapai Plumbing and Heating. Now is the time to make sure your air conditioning system is ready to go into extra innings this summer. And with $1,500 off qualified AC units with installation or 0% financing, you will be hitting a grand slam and staying cool all summer long. Low credit or no credit? Don't strike out. We offer no credit check financing as well. Give Yavapai Plumbing and Heating a call today at 776-7025 or online at ypeinc.com.
This is your Conservative Minute with State Representative David Stringer.
This is David Stringer. It seems like everywhere we turn, the cost of living and the cost of government keep going up. Some claim that taxes are the price we pay for civilization. But are places with the highest taxes and the most government the best places to live? We know that's not true. Justice John Marshall got it right in Marbury versus Madison when he warned that the power to tax is the power to destroy. The truth is that higher taxes make it harder for the average person to get ahead in life. I believe that what you earn by your own labor and initiative belongs to you and not the government. That's why I've opposed tax increases and worked to keep government small and taxes low, so working families and retirees living on fixed incomes can keep more of what they have. Low taxes and less government are an important part of our quality of life in Arizona. As your state representative, I promise to do everything I can to keep taxes low and government out of your pocket.
This has been your Conservative Minute with David Stringer, paid for by Conservatives for Stringer.
Dad, what are you doing?
Cramming for college.
I'm the one going to college.
Yeah, but we need to figure out how we're going to pay for it all.
Discover Student Loans.
Discover does student loans?
Yeah, they're one of the top student loan lenders in the country. It takes 15 minutes or less to apply, and there are no fees for the life of the loan. Best of all, I can earn cash rewards if I get good grades.
Really?
Yeah, we still have time to apply and get a great rate.
So I can just chill. College kids still say that, right?
No one says that, Dad.
Really?
Yeah.
Visit discoverstudentloans.com to apply today. Limitations apply.
We're KQ&A.
Good afternoon, and thanks for making the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A, your choice for your Wednesday. I'm Link Elliott with a check of news and weather together on Q&A with DJ Phone, brought to you by Wallach & Volk. It's not known what led to a small plane crash near Wickenburg yesterday morning. Yavapai County Sheriff's Office spokesman Dwight Dievlin says the single-engine aircraft went down around 11:40 a.m. in an area west of Highway 71 that's difficult to get to.
Deputies had to hike in to actually reach the crash site. Some other folks in the area that walk in to render aid.
The plane had two occupants. One was flown from the scene to a Phoenix area hospital. The other occupant didn't require medical attention. Dievlin explains the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office will be working with federal investigators to determine what happened.
We will contain the scene, awaiting their instructions, depending on the severity of the crash.
According to the Federal Aviation Administration, the plane was on its way to Lake Havasu City from Scottsdale when the engine failed. The aircraft caught on fire and was destroyed when it hit the ground. The Yavapai County Sheriff's Office is releasing more information about a fatal shooting.
On June 12, 30-year-old Phoenix resident Troy Mobley allegedly shot a man while they were sitting in a vehicle near the pawn shop on Highway 69 in Prescott Valley. The Yavapai County Sheriff's Office spokesman Dwight Devlin says Mobley went to a Spring Valley home that night.
Initially, Mobley was spotted wearing a wig in the backyard of the Meadow Lane home by the homeowner's wife. The homeowner went outside to tell Mobley he was not welcome at his home.
The homeowner, who knows Mobley, saw him on the back porch and he told him to leave. Devlin explains Mobley struck the victim in the mouth with a soda can before reaching into his pocket.
The homeowner, now armed, considered the likelihood Mobley was reaching for a firearm and shot him. At that time, the homeowner's wife and several small children were in the home. It was determined Mobley was not armed. The homeowner suffered injuries and was treated at the scene. No arrest was made at the time.
Mobley was airlifted to a Phoenix area hospital where he later died. The incident remains under review and the investigation will be submitted to the Yavapai County Attorney's Office to determine if any charges will be filed against the homeowner. The victim in the Prescott Valley shooting has been released from the hospital. I'm Bill Monroe reporting.
Taking a look now at your KQ&A weather. Clear tonight, sunny and hot tomorrow. Expect an overnight low of 65 tonight in the Prescott area with a high of 96 tomorrow and a high of 95 on Friday. 68 degrees tonight for Cottonwood and the Verde Valley with a high on Thursday of 106 and a high on Friday of 103. Q&A will continue after this. I'm Link Elliott for The Talk, the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM and 95.5 FM. KQ&A.
Experts in treating chronic and hard-to-heal wounds. The Advanced Wound Care Center at the YRMC Del E. Webb Outpatient Center in Prescott Valley is ready to help. We work closely with your physician to create an individualized healing plan customized to your needs and lifestyle. This allows personal one-on-one care designed to enhance your comfort and recovery. Ask your doctor about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. It's state-of-the-art wound care therapy that accelerates healing and fights infection, and it's available at the Advanced Wound Care Center. Talk to your doctor about the Advanced Wound Care Center. We're conveniently located at the YRMC Del E. Webb Outpatient Center in Prescott Valley. Call 771-4788 or visit yrmc.org.
Written or co-written some of the best-known songs of our time.
Johnny Come Lately.
The legendary J.D. Souther.
New Kid in Town.
An intimate evening with a man and his music.
Call out my name.
July 16th at the Prescott Elks Theater. J.D. Souther.
Don't you do what you live.
Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter. Songwriters Hall of Fame inductee. In a night filled with hits.
Something in the dark.
You've heard J.D. Souther's songs performed by the Eagles, Linda Ronstadt, James Taylor, and more.
Faithless love.
Now hear J.D. Souther live. Get reserved seats at the Prescott Elks Theater. PrescottElksTheater.com or phone 928-777-1370. Don't miss J.D. Souther live.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
We are back live at 3:35, and keeping with our writer's theme today, we have Susan Lang from Peregrine Books. Susan's been with Peregrine for how long now?
Since about a month before it opened. It'll be 6 years in November.
Not only is it the coolest bookstore in northern Arizona, but you guys provide such a great way for people to discover the world. And the reason I bring that up is because on my email every morning, I get a mailing from a wonderful magazine called Mental Floss. And one of their words today, ironically, was the base word for peregrine. It's a foreign word for peregrine, name for the falcon, name for the pilgrim falcon, for exploring the world. And that's what you do at Peregrine Books, don't you?
Absolutely, we do.
What is the greatest pleasure that you see from people seeing and finding new material they had never read before?
I guess their excitement. They just get really into it, and you know, they might sit down to just look it over in a chair, and an hour later they'll be still looking at it. You know, it's wonderful.
It's fun to explore a new world, isn't
it? That's exactly right. Yeah.
And you've got a workshop coming up this Saturday. Now, you're a veteran author. I had several published books, each of which I have synopses here. But tell us what's going on Saturday that writers should be attending.
Well, I decided, I've done workshops on character and on development. But I decided one thing I haven't talked about was when you use multiple points of view in a book. And I haven't in all my books, but I find myself doing that for different reasons more and more. And I really like to do it. It's much more interesting to follow several people's thinking. So I thought I would offer it and see if anyone would like to talk about it, and I might offer a follow-up, depending on how much interest there is. It's going to be a talk and a interactive with people.
Have you ever heard of a Japanese movie, Rashomon?
Oh, yeah.
You know where I'm going with this,
talk,
don't you?
About that.
Good, good.
Yeah.
For those who have never, well, I'll let you tell the story. For those who have never heard of Rashomon, why does that parallel what you're going to talk about with points of view?
Well, it is a tricky one, Rashomon, with multiple points of view, because it's the same scene and it's told by several different characters who see it completely different, each one. And that's really hard to do and keep the interest of the reader. But that's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, a wonderful story. And we see that played out in courtrooms all the time.
Yes.
Where you have the prosecutor and the defense essentially arguing over the same story.
Right.
And somewhere in the middle is probably the truth, though they have different shades of it, don't they?
Exactly. And there's been studies to show that people's points of view are not that reliable, because they see it in completely different ways. Maybe in your own family, the same view is not shared of a certain incident that happened.
I found that out. And we see that, too, with movies that are made from books. Because when you're seeing the movie, you're seeing what the director sees and interprets in that book. Whereas when you read the book, you're filtering everything in that book through your own prism of memories, fears, anxieties, hopes, everything else, right?
Right. And so you see it your way and can be surprised by what a director sees. Of course, sometimes they aren't copying the book. It's said that a movie is a short story. You know, the book is a novel, which is different than you usually would think. But it's interesting. So they can only really capture and do a good job on a certain aspect of the book.
What got you into writing as a girl?
Well, I just could not write. Just started writing, and I didn't take myself seriously because I was a girl, and all the books I read seemed to be written by men, you know? And so I just didn't take it seriously, but I had to do it. And then later, I started taking myself seriously. This was before creative writing programs even opened up. And, but I started with poetry and short stories. And when they began publishing, you know, I remember it was, oh, I think it was 1985. Was it? Or a little, no, maybe it was a little over that. And when I decided to try a novel, and it was very scary, because it was like starting a journey, and I didn't know where I would end up. But then I got addicted to doing that.
And when I was a kid in grade school, I still remember the first published material by a woman that I read. It was Shirley Jackson's short story, The Lottery.
Oh, a wonderful story.
Which scared the bejeebers out of me. And I thought, wow, this is really cool stuff. So who were the writers you've always admired?
Well, I used to cut my teeth on the Russians, Dostoevsky and Tolstoy. And
you like nice little thin books, don't you?
Yeah, right. I could not stand the fact that War and Peace was ending.
Sure. No. Well, you know, like Roger Ebert says about movies, he said there's no, you know, a great movie is always too short and a bad movie is always too long. Same for books, right?
Right, exactly. And the book I just published last fall is In God's Trailer Park. And that is a finally getting a version that worked of a 555-page book that I wrote as my first novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work good enough, so I...
Now, in that book, In God's Trailer Park, you're talking about a waitress who's trying to protect her schizophrenic son from himself and a lot of other things going on, right?
Exactly.
How much of that is drawn from things you've personally observed?
Most of it.
Really?
Yeah, I worked as a social worker in my 30s, and...
There's a book right there.
Right. Oh, yeah, I could write many of those.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I mean, there's a piece of my family in there, and, you know, it just kind of all comes together. Oh, this should be here. My first attempt was called Roadkill, because the people were really down and out, and it had 7 points. I was trying to put it all in one novel,
yeah.
And I realized later I cannot do that.
Sure. And when it comes to writing a book that is essentially nonfiction with characters you've known, how delicate is it a dance between making their story credible and not offending the people who it is based on who might read the book?
Well, I don't think of it a lot. What I'm writing now is a memoir, but it's a novelized memoir,
mm-hmm.
And I am kind of worried about my children reading
it. Is this about me?
Right. Well, you know, I found that I've used people as prototypes,
sure.
And everyone thinks it's them.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that happens. It's not a bad thing, but, you know, you have the little... escape clause saying it's fiction,
sure.
And not based on anybody, but everyone's based on something,
mm-hmm.
Even if it's three or four people.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about some of your other books. Let's start with Juniper Blue.
Well, Juniper Blue is the second book in a trilogy that started with Small Rocks Rising, a woman homesteading in 1929 in the Southwest. In the wilderness, and she is pretty wild herself. And just, she came out of the flapper age, and she wants to live a life that she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And women had a hard time doing that. So it took me 3 books to grow her up.
Hmm.
And
I'll ask you the same question I always ask the authors that I interview, that I pre-tape interviews with. In the course of writing your novels, at some point, because the storylines, the plots, and the characters are really starting to come alive, do you ever find yourself having to keep up with them?
Oh, of course. That's what you look for.
Yeah.
If it doesn't happen, you don't have a good book going on.
Because you realize the reader will be engaged too, won't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, and you know, there's a lot of thought and thinking, but the joys are when it just takes off by
mm-hmm.
itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're off taking a walk, and suddenly they start speaking to you. You've got to get back home and write and get down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I love those times.
I was telling Bill Weiss, the previous guest, about the book that I'm reading now by the great director, Sidney Lumet, and he talks about screenplays. And he says he has known screenwriters to spend a week fighting over a single word or a single line. Have you ever had that experience?
Oh, yeah. I fight with myself over it. And sometimes I will just kind of give up, use the best. And then a week later, it'll come to me exactly the way to do it. And I'll go back and change it.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how that happens. You know, it's stuck there in your mind, even though you've forgotten to even think about
it. Yeah. When you said a week later, it reminded me, I've also asked writers this. How often, after you've submitted your final manuscript, do you go, oh, no, I should have added this to it. Can I still add this to it? Has that happened to you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And not only that, I never do a reading from my work without editing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've gone back, with, especially with Small Rocks Rising, which did win the Willow Award.
Nice.
But I was, I mean, there are whole paragraphs there. I think, why is that there? I just didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what. Yeah.
Speaking of doing a reading, when you're doing a reading at your bookstore, and some people who are attending obviously have read your book, do you ever find yourself answering a question about a character or a plot line and having to think back, okay, now what did I say about that?
Occasionally, in the early ones. But, you know, it's amazing how it kind of stays alive in you.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the better parts,
sure.
The parts you read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things that I probably wouldn't do now in some of my books.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember exactly why I did them. You know, sometimes people write, I didn't start with a real plan, and most novelists do. And maybe I should have, but I found the spontaneous expression much, much better. But now I stop, and I get to a point, and I think of possible ways I might go. But I was writing my first book, and I realized that something terrible was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I realized it because if I were reading a book, that's what I would see. And I didn't know. I didn't plan it.
Yeah. So tell us about the sawtooth complex.
The sawtooth complex kind of follows up on the trilogy in that it's in contemporary life, but it's about a fire that took out the whole homestead of the first three novels, and the whole contemporary problem we're having with fire and what it does to people and how painful it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then where do you go from there?
Does everyone you think have a book in them to be written?
Probably. And with self-publishing, a lot of people are getting them written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes they could use some more editing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of sad, but it's a book that maybe their families would like. And
you don't need to be a New York Times bestseller.
No. Yeah. To just want to get your story out there.
And that's, I think, what is so addictive about it, to see that book about your life story, even on your own bookshelf. I mean, there it is, the record. And that can be handed down through generations.
That's right.
You know, as a keepsake of the life that you've lived.
Yeah.
It really is interesting. So I know you do teaching. You're a faculty emeritus at Yavapai College, and you teach at Prescott College. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see first-time writers making?
Well, I guess not editing. I think writing is rewriting.
Mm-hmm.
And especially beginning writers, young writers, just don't want to go back over it. That's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they want it. And I think I used to have a had a group in one of my creative writing classes that decided they didn't want any change, and they put out a little journal, you know, like it was not formally put out, called Raw Words, and kind of in defiance, and it was funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them now have gone on to publish, and they do editing now.
I had an English comp or English lit teacher in college who assigned us an essay, 1,100-word essay, and he came back to me one day and said, this is really, really well written. Now make it from 1,100 to 900 words. Okay. So I do that. I turn it back in. Boy, this is really good. Now make it 700 words. How? Well, that's how you learn to write.
Exactly.
And it was painful, but boy, he taught me how to write. He really did.
Exactly.
Because you have to make the reader hang on every word, don't you?
Yes.
You have to give them a reason to turn that page, right?
Yeah, and you don't want them to put it down because they're bored.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I told you before we went on the air, when I was in Los Angeles, I was at a bookstore, and the writer was talking about why he didn't put an index in his book. It was a nonfiction book. And I asked him, he said, well, because too many people who know about the book figure they might be in it. So they will look for the index, see where they are in the book, read that one page and put it back. I'd rather they pick up the book, look through it, maybe get hooked by a few passages or a few pages and take the book home. Good strategy.
Very smart. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to do that. So tell me your hours of business at Peregrine Books.
Well, we are open on the weekdays from 10 till 7. And then on Friday and Saturday, it is 10 till 9. Sunday is 10 till 6.
Mm-hmm. And your workshop coming up Saturday is when?
2 p.m. And that's in Saturday afternoon, coming right up.
And bring a notepad, right? You're going to learn a lot, aren't you?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless you have a great memory, hopefully I say some things that deserve notes.
You know, I was watching, I think it was CBS Sunday Morning last week. They were profiling the great journalist Seymour Hersh, who is 81 now, and he is still doing exposés, and he does everything longhand on notepads. He refuses to put them on computers because he's been told that certain government people might be hacking into the information that he exposes. So he writes it all in longhand. And for that matter, Woody Allen still does his screenplays on an old Olivetti.
That is amazing.
Isn't that so?
Yes, I know. Yeah.
So that means he's still by his white out. Hard to find.
Which
nowadays,
is, I was going
to
say.
It is hard to find, yeah, indeed. Susan Lang, what a pleasure having you on. We look forward to your Saturday workshop for writers. Thanks for joining us today on Q&A. Continued success in your writing.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Stay tuned. I've got tomorrow's guests on Q&A and some final thoughts coming up on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 11:30 a.m., 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. We stream live around the world at kaqna.com.
Provide value. That is what a CPA can do for you. Hi, this is David A. Snyder, CPA. Now is a great time of year for business valuations. Valuations are for providing a value for your business so you can retire from it, sell it, or expand it. With my ex-military, task-oriented mindset, and over 20 years of experience, you can trust that you can get the most accurate business valuation. Give me a call or visit davidasnydercpa.com for more information. You deserve the sharpest in Arizona. David A. Snyder, CPA.
Membership in the Prescott Chamber of Commerce is good for your business. As a member, your business will be listed on the Prescott Chamber website and in the Chamber's annual directory. You're also eligible to place brochures in the Chamber's lobby and opportunities galore to network with other business people at monthly mixers and other events. Join the Prescott Chamber today at 445-2000. Prescott's business advocate, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce.
You know the sound. AA, MCO, Transmissions and Total Car Care in Prescott Valley. But what you may not know about are all of our other services available at AMCO. I'm Gary Denton, owner of AMCO Prescott Valley. We have been winning over customers with our superior service, competitive pricing, and oh yes, our fresh popcorn. I personally guarantee that you will love your experience with us. So don't go here for an oil change, there for electrical diagnostic, and somewhere else for air conditioning work. We do it all at AA, MCO, Transmissions and Total Car Care.
Arizona Diamondbacks Baseball is live on KQ&A. Diamondbacks Baseball brought to you by Earnhardt Kia, Pitcher's One-Hour Air Conditioning, Benjamin Franklin Plumbing, Prescott Valley Automotive, Waters Garden Center, Barrett Propane, Primavera Online School, Al's Auto Body, House Chilson, Country Bank, Prescott True Value, Affinity RV, Yamapai Bottle Gas, Gettles High Desert Mechanical, Heating and Cooling, Cliff Castle Casino, D-backs visit the Pirates, Thursday afternoon at 4 a.m. 11:30, by 99.9 FM in Prescott and Chino Valley, and 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. KQ&A.
Take me out to the ball game.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop.
Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rugby Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at HICountryRVCenter.com.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Well, maybe you heard me talking yesterday about American Graffiti screening last night as part of a Tuesday Night Classics at the Harkins 14. And I had mentioned that it made a movie star out of Ron Howard, who, of course, then became a TV star once again because of Happy Days. Well, Happy Days gave birth to a phrase that has worked its way around for years called jumping the shark. If something has jumped the shark, it usually means it's kind of outlived its creativity, it's on its way down, and they use it to, you know, like for a TV series whose best days are behind them and it's starting to die off. Well, it comes from an episode of Happy Days where Fonzie literally dons water skis and tries to jump a great white shark. And a lot of people thought, well, that's when the series started going down. I mean, Fonzie jumping the shark, really? Well, as it turns out that, speaking factually, that was the series' 91st episode, and the episode aired early in their fifth season. Now, if he truly jumped the shark, it was probably a good thing, because, believe it or not, Happy Days ran for six more seasons in prime time, five of those in the top 25 of the Nielsens, and 164 more original episodes after Fonzie jumped the shark. So maybe it's time to retire that phrase, or actually, maybe it's a good thing that your best is still ahead. Stay tuned now for Talk of a Town Prescott, then join me Thursday with my guest Terry Davis from the Yavapai Humane Society, blues rocker Christian Berry, and Nolan Charles from the local production of Aladdin Jr. That's Thursday at 3 for Q&A, when I will see you on the radio.
You've been listening to Q&A on KQ&A. Today's show was sponsored by High Country Rec V Center, David Snyder, CPA, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Yavapai Regional Medical Center, and Prescott College. The views expressed on today's show do not necessarily reflect the views of KQ&A, Prescott Valley Broadcasting, our employees, or our advertisers. Join us next time for Q&A with DJ Phone on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM in Prescott, and at 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, KQ&A.